Gamecock fans, today's Thursday, February 19th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Thanks for joining me today. Hope all of you are doing well out there. Gamecock baseball team, I guess we'll hear this a lot. The bats came alive, and the bats did around the fourth inning yesterday against Gardner Webb. Carolina wins 12 to 2, a walk-off two-run homer by Logan Sutter. I think that's good for him. He was expected to come in and be one of the big hitters on this team, and he hadn't hit a lick since he's been here. And so, and that's in fall as well, from what we've read. And he hit a two-run dinger to do the and implement the run rule, and Carolina won 12 to 2 in 8 innings against the Bulldogs, who struggled last year and who threw 147 pitchers out there in the game. Strange game, as far as the operations of it go, and all that, but you'll take it. I mean, that's 8-2, 12-2 in the midweek. That's pretty good. Really neat thing coming up this weekend at Founders Park, welcoming in all three of the service academies that play major college sports in Army, Navy, and Air Force in 3 straight days. That's pretty awesome. Hats off to Paul Maneri, who I know used to coach at Air Force and has an affinity for that program, and the administration at South Carolina for doing that. I think that's you could go play, Austin Peay or someone like that and pick up 3 wins, or you could do something like this and you should still pick up 3 wins. But I think this is a little added good thing this weekend. First pitch is at, I believe, 2 p.m. against Army, the Black Knights of the Hudson River, coming in on Friday. And the Navy is Saturday. I believe Air Force is Sunday. So that's coming up. But 12-2, the Paul Maneri said after the game, he gave some new guys a chance to get some energy. And I think that's exactly what good coaches should do. The lifelessness, you got to get ready to go play each and every game. And if somebody else on the bench is going to bring you a spark, you got to play those guys. It doesn't always work out. I think in basketball, men's basketball, we've seen that this year. Lamont Paris, I don't want to say he's given up on some guys, but the minutes have certainly changed as we've moved forward with the guys like EJ Walker playing a bunch more because of energy and things like that. And it doesn't work out, hadn't worked out for them, but this baseball team has a lot of options, and it worked out. Will Craddock was one of those guys, back healthy freshman from T.L. Hanna in Anderson. He went 3 for 3 yesterday, very impressive. And again, he brought the energy. Talmadge LeCroy in the cleanup spot. I don't hate it. I don't hate it, folks. And I know that LeCroy is one of those guys, been around a long time, hasn't always, hit for high averages. And he got hurt last year. And the teams he's been on at times have not been all that good. He's slumped and struggled. But a lot of times, I mean, gosh, I started thinking about Scott Wingo. Scott Wingo obviously brought a lot to the table on defense and things like that. But his final year, his average went from like 180 to 3 something. So sometimes guys get better. I say that all the time in football, but in baseball as well. And as long as Talmadge continues to produce, no problem with him being in the cleanup spot at all. Is that you don't always need a slugger there. Talmadge can hit for power, but again, a 3-hit night last night for him. So he's seeing the ball pretty well and really having a good year at catcher. Really everybody's kind of worried about catcher coming in, and I think there's a reason maybe they weren't as worried about it internally. Speaking of catchers, I think Iowa transfer Reese Moore at the designated hitter spot. He's been very consistent hitting the ball. He was 2 for 3 with an RBI again last night or yesterday. Luke Juhasz, a transfer in from Lafayette, Louisiana kid, 2 for 4. Did strike out twice. But Will Craddock, man, that's good. It's good to see an in-state freshman baseball player do good things. Eric Parker got in. Or played yesterday at 5 at-bats. He was only 1 for 5, but had 2 RBIs. Remember, that guy played at Georgia last year. He's a high draft pick out of high school, so he's got some talent. But just a good thing to see. And then at the end, with the 2-run home run for Logan Sutter, who came in and pitched it for Tyler Bach, who continues to play well. He's 1 for 4, but had an RBI and a big home run yesterday and scored 2 runs, got on base. I think he was hit by a pitch, but he's continuing to play really well. So you see some of these other guys come along. You see some consistency this week. It's 2 games, and they're 4-1. Yeah, did not start all that well yesterday, but, you know, in baseball, it's streaky. Once you get going, sometimes you're going. The good news is Carolina continues to play defense pretty well. And also, they pitch pretty well. Bradley Hodges started the game last night, went 2 2/3 innings, struck out one, you know, gave up a couple of earned runs. But then Zach Russell came in. Gosh, he pitched pretty well, 2 1/3. Did give up 3 hits, struck out 3. We saw Josh Gregoire. That's what Derek said yesterday on the thing. Pitched scoreless innings. Hudson Lee threw well. Patrick Dudley came in, gave up a hit, but shook it off and ended up getting him out of there. So, you know, Gardner Webb only had 6 hits. Gamecocks did commit an error yesterday, I believe, on a attempted pickoff, but they continue to play solid defense. Patrick Evans got back in the lineup last night at second base and then went to center field. He had a couple of hits. You know, lots of folks I talked to think he's Carolina's best player. So, you know, we talk about the struggles a lot around here with baseball, but last night, yesterday afternoon, actually, was not that way. 74 degrees at first pitch. So, unlike last year where it seemed like the bad weather never would leave Columbia, it's been nice. Been nice, as they say. Been nice outside. It's nice outside where I was at yesterday, too. I kind of sat on the porch and filled up a big glass of water with some fresh lemon in it and got some vitamin D yesterday afternoon. So enjoy the weather on February 19th. I know my time's coming with where I live. I know this is not going to last. Now, down there, yeah, maybe you have a milder March. It's always going to be cold for 1 week in March in the South. Just my experience, that's what it's been. But warmer temps are just around the corner for the great state of South Carolina. I believe, and that's good because that's why you live in the South, right? You know, enjoy the spring is the most wonderful time of the year weather-wise, in my opinion. Even though fall is my favorite season, if that makes any sense, obviously, for football. But nice win for the Gamecocks, and we'll see if they can get some momentum, continue the momentum at the plate this weekend, continue to pitch well, and then get ready for that Clemson series next weekend. First 2 games are in Columbia. First one's at Founders, second one's at Segra. And then they go up to Jack Leggett Stadium, right? Doug Kingsmore Stadium for the Sunday finale in the rivalry series. Gamecocks, a lot of fans are saying it's very important to win. I think it's important to win at least one. I don't know. You know, I don't know if they'll take the series this year, but don't get swept, man. That's not anything good that's happened to this point would be severely diminished with a 3-game sweep. So we'll see what happens with all that. Gamecock softball. And if you're a newsletter subscriber, if you're not to the ITG newsletter, you can go to chiefsportsnetwork.com and there's a little thing that says ITG newsletter. You can sign up now. It's got written content. So this type of stuff you're going to not totally, and it's just a sampling, maybe 5%. Of some of the stuff you're going to see on InsideTheGamecocks.com when we launch. But check that out. There's also a post on the YouTube channel with the link to get the newsletter. But and Jamie Bradford's got a softball diamond report, insider report, coming out today before first pitch. But they're on the West Coast. They play Washington of the Big Ten. Still seems strange to say that. And yours truly, fundamentally, at some point, especially with the non-football sports, I'm going to start talking about, like, oh, they're playing a Pac-12 team with its Washington, Oregon, SC, UCLA. And my first challenge to get through that is this weekend. So we'll see kind of what happens. But they play the Huskies of the Big Ten now at 4 p.m. in Cathedral City, California. You can find the streaming information. You got to pay a subscription to watch it, but a one-time thing, I think. And that kind of, I think that money goes to the tournament and the play of the girls. I don't know if South Carolina's players get any NIL money off of it or not, but It's to support the sport, I would think. I think I heard that right. And if I'm wrong, tell me. But they play Washington and then some other programs. We had Ashley Chastain Woodard on the show earlier this week, and that interview is cut and up on our YouTube channel if you want to check that out. But look for that email, Jamie Bradford's Diamond Report. He's got a Diamond Report, Insider Softball Report that'll be out, a Baseball Bulletin, which is a baseball insider report, for our Diamond sports coverage here on ITG. The morning show is up at 10 with JB and friends. Phil and I will welcome in Alex Jones of thebigspur.com for Gamecock Smorgasbord today. You got Sports Talk streaming tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Chief Sports app. Gamecock women's basketball team has another top 25 matchup, 8:30 tonight at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. 8:30 is the tip for that one, and so we'll see if they can continue their winning ways. They've been hot lately, and they play on the SEC network. Number 25, Bama. Number 3, South Carolina. Gamecocks have won 6 in a row, 9-1 away from home. At one loss in overtime at Oklahoma. Alabama's a pretty good basketball team on the women's side. They're very competitive, so we'll see see what happens down there in Tuscaloosa. So at Coleman Coliseum. As the Gamecocks tangle with the Tide tonight. So check all that out around Gamecock country. We need to bring that back. Remember, this is Gamecock country and that is Gamecock country. We got to bring that back. We'll figure that out. So anyway, football topic today. Wanted to dive in. It's one of my favorite topics is recruiting and how we judge recruiting classes, the industry. I mean, I spent a long time covering national recruiting, working in the Rivals.com corporate office, heading up recruiting for that organization. I worked at ESPN with Tom Luganville and Craig Haubert and Billy Tucker. And Todd McShay was part of that division. Never worked with Todd McShay. I don't even know if he knows who I am, but I'm not a name dropper. If anything sounds like I'm name dropping, if I drop a name, it's legit. I know him. So I always kind of go back and make sure if I drop a name, I clarify, right? Well, I don't really know him. But McShay was part of our group at Scouts Inc. And kind of contracted with ESPN and got a good look at that side of it, the TV part of it, and then obviously helped launch 24/7 Sports with Shannon Terry. The BigSpur.com came over with me there and ran that recruiting organization while we developed things like composite rankings and database timelines and things of that nature. Very thankful, happy, and honored to really not be doing that and to be talking to my people every day, the South Carolina Gamecocks. Don't get it wrong, but just kind of the big picture stuff and how we cover it and how we look at it and evaluate it. And that's analysts, fans, coaches, everybody. I spend a lot of time thinking about that because there's always a better way, right? But then you have to balance that with you guys. I mean, in recruiting, it's a nice piece of content or nice information to go back and say, yeah, that class ended up being pretty good. Let's rank it here. But it means more when you have analysts and experts tell you within a certain amount of accuracy, just because of the nature of football, how good it is going to be. Because, hope is forward facing and everybody wants hope and everybody wants to, have wins in the offseason, because when you have the more wins in the offseason you have, obviously, the better your chances are of winning during the season, and that's what it's all about. The problem I've had with that, and hopefully it's getting better, because sports fans, I mean, you guys out there are getting smarter. There's a wealth, treasure trove of information out there that you guys are smart enough to find, and you formulate your opinions, and there's no lack of intelligence out there. And even some of the folks that message board posters and on social media that people like to hate on that have these wild takes and can't quite articulate them. They care about the knowledge. Otherwise they wouldn't. I mean, they care about the information. So I don't know that those people are lacking of intelligence either. I just don't know that they display it because we're all human. We're all different. We're not the same. We're not monolithic, and everybody expresses themselves online differently, just like everybody talks differently and everybody communicates with people differently. And that's a reason to celebrate humanity, right? So I say all that because the problem I've had with recruiting is, and I've noticed this sort of in the Muschamp era, and it would because there was so much emphasis on five star, four star because of Alabama, basically. I'll just say it. It's because of Alabama. And then what Kirby built at Georgia didn't help refute that narrative because that's exactly what they did. They kept stacking recruiting classes and boom, they were the best team in the country for 2 years in a row, really three, I think. But that didn't help. But then you have Michigan, Ohio State kind of did that. But then Indiana. So two out of the last three national champions haven't been your recruiting national champions. Ole Miss went further than everybody else in the SEC. I don't think it's out of the question that Lane Kiffin can recruit, but were their recruiting rankings in the top three? No. Last year, who went the furthest? Texas went farther than anybody, and their recruiting rankings always are. Texas didn't even make it this year, So I think we're finding, especially in the 12-team playoff era and because of the portal, that the conversation is a little different surrounding high school recruiting. That said, I got ripped, and maybe rightfully so, on a message board recently, where it was pointed out that at one point I'd said something to the effect of, signed contributors, three star. And it was somebody that was arguing that three stars weren't worth signing. Okay. That's basically, if you're saying that, if you're complaining every time, every single time, your school signs a three-star player with no context, you're just doing it because they're three stars, then what you're communicating is they're not worth signing. And that's just not true. It never has been true. So I wanted to clarify that because it's easy to kind of get, that was a, I think Muschamp era was a long time ago. There was no transfer portal. Recruiting was different then. But I wanted to clarify that because I don't want that attached to my name because it's not true. You can't just go sign a class full of contributors. I mean, and win. You can't even compete doing that. And it really doesn't matter what they're rated. So in the interest of kind of trying to push back against some people that every time Carolina got a three-star commit, they'd panic and trash the kid before he ever played it down. Trash the staff, trash the kid, which is part of it. I get it. But I felt like that was very unfair individually. Not, this class has no blue chippers. That's good. That's actually a good thing. No, that's not true. You need your share of blue chippers. That's a mathematical, it doesn't mean you're dead. Indiana just won a national championship with seven blue chippers on their whole roster. Especially with the portal now. We're in a different era. I'm going back in time talking about traditional recruiting. That's kind of what we're going to get into here in a second. We're going to get into the 2025 class because I noticed some things about that doing some research. But you can't, obviously you can't build a championship level roster, and that's everybody's goal that way. So first and foremost, when I said that, that was in a different recruiting time. It's not really applicable now. But second, what I meant was, what you want is when you go back, when everything's over, you're going to look at your class. Even before the portal, you're going to have three, four, five, sometimes more transfer out, or get processed, as they used to say. You're going to have guys that were rated high that aren't as good as people thought they would be or didn't reach there for whatever reason. You have guys with injuries that struggle in that department. That happens a lot. But then you have guys that overperform. And so the rankings, and we're going to talk about how the 2025 class, when you rank in terms of impact, when you go back and re-rank that, if you're looking at, like, say there's 18 guys at the end of the day that played their careers at South Carolina. Don't have to make it 4 years. Maybe they made it three, but didn't transfer, that impacted your program, or even if they did now for a couple of years, you look and you rank them according to impact. So what I was saying by that is when you recruit and you're recruiting 25 guys like you used to in a class, then if a guy's rated lower and his projection isn't all that high, and there's reasons for that, he's just a good football player and they took a flyer on him, he may not become, Darius Rush, right? But he may contribute in a key way to your football team, as a three-star prospect or whatever, and that's a win because not, you're not recruiting. You recruit over the if you sign 25 guys in a class like you used to, you recruit 100 guys over 4 years. You don't even have that many. Well, you have that many roster spaces now. You used to not have that many roster spaces. Obviously, not everybody is going to be a star, but the way you build a program, which is what they were trying to do under Muschamp, is that bottom part again? When you go back and re-rank it, looking behind, and again, we have to look forward because you guys, you wouldn't be interested if we didn't. And I'm certainly like that part of it too. But when you look back, with those guys are contributors, that's good. And that's why I was a little militant about standing up for recruiting three stars. And there's been a lot of three stars that have gone on the NFL from here. Different things impact winning and losing besides roster as well, especially nowadays with the portal. And then I got ripped because it said, well, how many of those three stars contributed to the 4-8 record last year? I don't, let's look at, well, the best, one of the best freshmen on the team and a big contributor, was a three-star guy. You have other three-star players that have played really well at South Carolina when they were ranked that out of high school. So, and I didn't write those down because I don't want to spend a ton of time on something that was said on a message board. But maybe I deserve to be ripped there a little bit because people do take bits and pieces, and maybe I didn't clarify. I don't remember exactly. I think it may have been the recruiting Moneyball piece that I wrote that was very, very popular. I think Indiana lended some credence to what I was saying. But portal or not, I do think it's important to sign contributors. I think it's even more important out of the portal because if you have an upperclassman out of the portal, now some of the young guys like Jabri Coleman, who's coming in as a redshirt freshman. Yeah, hopefully he contributes. And hopefully, he's a guy that does that. But he has a longer runway. That's just like taking a freshman. But the upperclassmen, you don't want them there just taking up a space. And most of the, by and large, most of the portal guys get money, so you don't want to waste the resources if they're not at least contributing. And the coaching staff has to determine that. And they have to be right more than they're wrong, way more than they're wrong on that. Sometimes they're wrong, and I'll freely admit that. But there's nothing wrong with taking three-star players, especially out of the state of South Carolina, where players end up, give me a South Carolina three-star any day of the week, But there's others. I mean, Jalen Kilgore struggled to get to four stars. Hale McGranahan has led, I love Hale. He's kind of led two rankings crusades, Kilgore and then Julian Walker. And Julian's coming in. We don't know exactly what he'll be, but he's very, let's just call him very, very promising at this point. But he's two for two with that because Kilgore was a baller. And you got other guys that, three-star guys that end up being really good. So my point with all that is don't trash individual recruits when you get them just because they're three stars. And I do notice that less and less and less. And I think the portal for fans has changed that because, there's not as much pressure on with high schools. Yeah, it's disappointing. And I tell you, in June, May, June, July, oh, it's like it used to be. Everybody's all into it and melting down and happy and excited and it's a battle, but you don't have that. Oh my God, here we go again. Who are we taking? What? Why are they doing this like there used to be? So it's kind of a moot point. But I didn't want to say that to say this. Looking at the 2025 class, this class was ranked high school wise 19th in the country. It's a bigger class, so it's important. 2025 is an important class. 2024 obviously had some studs in it. And a lot of them are still here. Some of the higher rated guys have moved on, but 2024 did have some studs. It was a smaller class though, as is 2026. But 25, it's a large class. There's still 21 guys left from last season. And so when you look at it, it's a class that I think going into the second year we'll get a clearer picture on. Right now, a lot of guys took a red shirt. A lot of guys kind of are at one position at wide receiver, or two positions, wide receiver and linebacker. Very large groups of wide receiver and linebacker in 2025. So a lot of wait and see, but then there's a lot of players heading into next season that I think the Gamecocks are going to need to be able to count on. Not a ton, but several. So you go through it. Here's how it ranked according to 24/7 Sports rankings. Just going to use them for now instead of the composite because you're kind of splitting hairs. And for 2025, they're very similar. I normally use composite, but I'll just use 24/7 for the purposes of this because that's how I made my notes. Number one player was Donovan Darden. I believe he redshirted last season, played special teams. I got to check on that. He's heading into a sophomore year. Based on what I was told about him in recently, probably no, I wouldn't pencil him in as the fourth linebacker right now. He'll go battle, but the contact I spoke with was not as maybe optimistic about him being ready to go get after it, and play a lot this year. Now, listen, that's an opinion that was formed based on practices and stuff this past season. So we will see what happens in spring. I think Donovan Darden has a lot of potential upside. Havelock High School has been good to the Gamecocks through the years, as we all know. Faro Cooper, Corey Robinson. So we'll see kind of what happens with him. But he was the top player in the class, really. I liked him at edge, man, coming out of high school. A lot. His high school film with his hand in the dirt was elite. And then I got sold on linebacker at the Shrine Bowl. I mean, he played really well, linebacker in the Shrine Bowl. So we'll see. They'll Trey Money and Clayton White, they'll get him coached up. And Carolina's got three proven linebackers coming back next year. Number two was Malik Clark. I think we saw Malik didn't play a whole lot this year. Saw what he could kind of do in the spring game, going up and getting it. Has to work on hands. Still a player that, everybody's got high hopes for out of Rock Hill High School. Gamecocks flipped him from Florida State. The third ranked player was Donovan Murph, who enrolled early. We know what Murph did this past year. Shed Surratt, we know what he did. He was fourth. Kendall Daniels Jr., who played more and more at the end of the year, big safety for Virginia, was fifth. Lex Cyrus, the speedster, didn't play, redshirted last year at wide receiver, sixth. Demola Ajidahun, who got a cup of coffee playing time wise at tackle this year as a true freshman this past year, he's there. They're really high on him. Contacts indicate that he's one of the ones they were like, yeah, some of these offensive linemen that left, there wasn't a crying session or a, you know, there was no moping when they left. But this is one they wanted to, they would have been sad had he left. Caleb Williams, we've talked about him, injuries, needs to get healthy, but when he's healthy, they like him. Jaquavius Dodd, high upside defensive end out of Eastside 9th. Mike Tyler, who we talked about on the shows yesterday, tight end out of Hammond 10th. Jordan Gideron, still high on him, extremely young guy, wide receiver 11th. Anthony Addison, saw some playing time this past year at edge. Another Hale McGranahan guy. Hale, I can't. Gosh, we've talked about Hale three times today. Hopefully he's listening, but he did a great job. He's real high on him, so that makes me high on him because why? Who am I to doubt Hale? Hell yeah. Jaquel Hallman, who returned kicks and played at nickel last year, he'll battle with Gerald Kilgore, who's now at nickel, and also with Quasheed Scott from the portal at nickel this year from Blackville High School. Good athlete, in-state guy, high upside, small town kid. Christian Ingram, shout out to my friend Craig. He's the 14th highest rated guy in the class. Late bloomer, 6'6", 305. Craig loves him. He's got size. I think he can definitely get in the rotation. The 15th ranked guy was Kobe Saki Pra out of the Atlanta area, an edge. Blew out his knee last year, unfortunately. God, all the edge, three edge guys out for the year last season. But he, when he signed or committed, I was told by contact within the program at the time that, for a sleeper developmental guy, that's about as good as you can get at edge. So I've still got my eye on him. He's not somebody people talk about a lot and only going into his second year. So we'll see kind of how all that goes. Number 16, Cutter Woods. I said yesterday, I'm a Cutter Woods believer. I think that heading into year two, I feel a lot better if something, God forbid, happened to Lenore Sellers. I feel a lot better about Cutter Woods this year than as a true freshman because he's only going to get better and better. And his floor was pretty high when he came in. So, as quarterback, potentially of the future, the 16th ranked guy in your class, Josh Smith from Dutch Fork. Of the linebackers that redshirted last year, if you had to make me guess on a guy that would slide into that fourth spot, it's probably Josh Smith. Just saying. Josh Smith, they flipped him from Coastal. A good player, played with his hand in the dirt, kind of like Darden. A lot of those guys did coming out of school. 18th, DeMarcus Leach from Abbeville. Actually, got to, they thought maybe he'd be a safety, got to campus, and he's a corner, and they're going to need him to play this year. 6'3, 193, 99 pound guy. So a bigger, longer guy. Kind of like Jazavian Currents, just at a smaller school. Led his team on a journey through the playoffs. I mean, a lot of these guys are similar. Kendall Daniels, high school quarterback as well. And got out there and competed well as a true freshman at corner last season. Didn't play quite as much as Judge Collier in 2023, but did play. Can Leach make the jump like Collier did from year one to year two? And that's the case with all these guys. There's an expectation of improvement, whether they played or not. The 19th ranked guy in the class was Jaden Pup Sellers. We're going to go rank the top five according to Impact here in a second. But yeah, he surpassed expectations. Chris Hatfield, a player I mentioned the other day that came in last summer from Georgia, Lincolnton area. He, big, tall, rangy guy again at safety. And a lot of people have been talking him up. So we'll see about this year. Maybe he can get in the mix somewhere. Don't count him out. He's a Torian Gray special. Again, has the length. And 21 is AJ Holloway, the linebacker from Buford, who also could get in the hunt for that other, a big inside linebacker guy. Disciplined player, strong, naturally strong, that kind of thing. So there's 21 guys. And I didn't count specialists. Max Kelly was the kickoff guy. And then you got Kyler Farrow, the long snapper from Wisconsin that came in with the class. Max Kelly, the place kicker. So. I didn't mention them, so it's really 23 when you count specialists, but 21 position players in that class left. Brian Rowe got out of Dodge, obviously, and also Tayshawn Austin, another one of those linebacker end types out of the state of North Carolina. He moved on. I think that was it from 2025, if I'm not mistaken. As far as the high school guys, obviously some portal guys left as well. But so who made the biggest impact? So what I think we should start doing in recruiting is when we look back on it, and you can do this along and along, these guys are in their second year, is start putting a list together that kind of puts the pedal to the metal. And this will change, it'll be like a graphic as far as impact goes. I always use this example of Jamie Robinson and Cam Smith when they came in under Muschamp in 2019. They were both freshmen. Cam Smith, definite redshirt, wasn't ready to play. Robinson got in there and started and played and broke up a pass to beat number three Georgia at the end and played well. He, of course, ended up going to Florida State after Muschamp left and was drafted. But who was drafted higher? It was Cam Smith. So at the end of the day, the rankings were held true. Robinson was a high three star. Cam Smith was a top 60 player. Maybe Cam was a little high, top 60 wise. I don't know what he was. Composite, I think, ended up being right. He's what, a second, third round pick, fourth round pick, by the Dolphins. But so at the end of the day, it held true. So it's not always that the guys that play early are the best ones at the end. They're just, their floor is higher. And so you have impact, And had I been just doing in that class an impact score, Robinson would have been up in the top three. I don't remember exactly who all was in the 2019 class. Zach Pickens was in that class, I think. But I knew from the start Robinson was a play early guy just because he was ready to go. And it's like Donovan Murphy versus Jordan Gidron, to bring it up to this class we're talking about now. Donovan Murphy more ready to play. Jordan Gidron, not, because he's much, even though they both enrolled early, he's much younger. It doesn't mean that at the end, Gidron won't be better. I don't know that. I'm not predicting that, but it could be that. Could be all these guys that did not play at receiver this past year could end up passing the guys in front of them because it's about floor, ceiling. Again, football's developmental. Guys get better, or sometimes guys don't get better. They've reached their ceiling and they get passed, and that happens too. We don't talk about that a whole lot, but that happens as well. So impact. So who made an impact right now? And you can't rank them all. Some of these guys didn't play a whole lot, but I managed to scratch out a top five, and that's for now. After 2026, this will change. The list will grow because Carolina's counting on a lot of these guys to go play next year and get in the mix. I looked at about three or four of them right now that could get in the two deep, should get in the two deep. And then when all this is done, we look back on it, and then that's how we judge the class. Right. But again, you can't do that. Can't tell, we all want to tell the future because we want to attach ourselves to hope and stuff. And we'll continue to do that, certainly. But, I think this is a good way to look back and kind of really judge how well are you recruiting, developing, and all that. The number one impact guy, obviously, I'll start at five. How about that? We'll count it down. Five would be Kendall Daniels Jr. And he played and he made an impact because he played on special teams, contributed, like I said. And then he got better and better, got into the dime package, didn't run a lot of dime, but when was actually playing on defense at the end of the year, 6'4", 218, former high school quarterback, could be a stud. Could be a stud, but he's not yet, obviously. And that's looking forward, right? But right now, he has made the fifth highest impact, I think. And again, not counting specialists, Max Kelly kicked off some last year, so he'd probably be in this mix as well. Fourth is Leach, who played at corner, saw some action there, played on special teams. Really looking for him to be in the two deep this year. But again, last year made an impact. Murph would be third. Murph caught 14 passes. He was part of the rotation at the end. Certainly had his moments, caught his first touchdown pass, came in over the summer, was consistent when given the opportunity, like most of the receivers on the team. But Donovan Murph would be right there at two. I mean, at three, two would be Pup Sellers. Again, he was the most consistent, productive wide receiver from the Oklahoma game on. Didn't play against Ole Miss. Other than that, when he played, he made plays, caught passes, produced stats, which was a lot different than the other receivers, right? I wonder if I have this theory Lenoris got un was very uncomfortable last year. That's important for a quarterback to be comfortable. I wonder if Pop, because it was his brother, it's kind of more of a security blanket, like the trust was there, and maybe just subconsciously it kind of kicked in that they were on the same page. Even with that, though, Pup's got to make the play, right? He's got to make the catch. He's got to compete physically. Once it gets out of Lenoris's hands, that's it, And he did. He did. And he came up big in some big moments. And I think there's a lot of reason in this new offense to be excited about him moving forward. But right now, when you're ranking the impact of the 2025 freshman class, he would have to be two. And then number one's obviously Shedd Surratt, played in 10 games, started nine of them, started six at left guard, three at right tackle, was extremely solid for a true freshman. His true freshman year, and maybe it's because he played inside and then swung to the outside at the end. I thought consistency wise, probably better than Josiah Thompson. Josiah was kind of up and down. And in 2024, everybody knew we'd live with that. But everybody, offensive line's been up and down. Shedd Surratt's pretty solid, for a true freshman. I think when you're talking about the offensive line this coming season, he absolutely factors in somewhere. I don't know exactly where yet. My guess is left guard. We talked about that yesterday, but yeah, Shedd Surratt from Gaffney. And so in the guys that were ranked in the top five, the top two were Darden and Clark. This is recruiting rankings. And then Murph, Surratt, Daniels, they're in the five impact. And then 18 and 19 leapfrogged everybody. You know, and that doesn't mean we're sitting here in 2 years and all this kind of washes out and Darden and Clark are up there. And boy, I really like Demola as you do at tackle. And I'm beyond curious to see what a healthy Caleb Williams can do just because every time he's gotten hurt, he's been on the cusp of getting into the mix at D tackle. And he's a hard worker and, from what I hear, a good kid. It's just been unfortunate so far, but hopefully that gets out of the way. So the 2025 class, that's 21 guys still left on the roster heading into next year. You're going to have to make sure if all these guys stick, these guys, it's important for now, for this coming year, as far as depth and two deep and special teams and all that goes, for them to contribute and start and things like that in some ways. But it's also good, big for the future, you know, because a lot of these players have, you know, upside. I mentioned Gideron earlier, Quay Dodd, Jaquavius Dodd. And when you look at Dodd and Addison at edge, that's another example of ceiling versus floor. Addison's got a higher floor. So Addison's probably going to play before Jaquavius, but in time, just like his cousin Kevin Dodd at Clemson. And I think he'll play before Kevin did up there. Jaquavius has the big upside. And, you know, at edge right now, they need these two guys to get in the rotation next season. In my opinion, that would be ideal. Will it happen? We'll find out pretty soon because spring practice is right around the corner. All right, folks, be sure to catch the morning show with JB and friends. I don't know his guest list this morning. I'm sorry. I should have communicated with him that way. He'll have some people on it. Maybe Mike Morgan's back today. He usually is in on Thursdays. And then, of course, Alex Jones coming in for Gamecock Smorgasbord on the show. Sign up for the newsletter, folks. Certainly enjoyed this episode of Coffee. Recruiting is always right in my wheelhouse. This has been JC Sherbert on Coffee on the Chief Sports Network inside the Gamecocks. I'm out. Holla.